This is Resonance 104.4 FM in Central London and around the world, resonancefm.com. That was Wavelength. This is Technical Difficulties with me, Tim Abbott, and my guest from insideworldsport.biz, Tom Deegan. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much for having me on behalf of Inside World Power Sport.
And, yeah, so you are the Paralympics correspondent for a website that covers a broad range of different sporting areas. It seems to be pretty much non-stop. I kind of gave up following the ins and outs of individual events with the Paralympics because I never got any chance to do anything else. So how do you cope with that?
There is obviously an awful lot going on across the board. I guess for the most part, your average person in the street just picks up the big names like your Oscar Pistoriuses, your Dave Weirs, your Ellie Simmons, and there is a lot going on. But I guess as we get closer to London 2012, the eyes are really turning on London, and I guess sort of looking across the board, really, it's just the big events like the athletics, the swimming, the wheelchair basketball that people's attention are turning on. But I think as we come closer to London, the broader spectrum of things and the sports that people wouldn't have heard of really are going to come into the limelight, which will be a good thing.
Oscar's an interesting case. We were talking about this before we got on to the show, because he is fighting effectively two simultaneous qualification campaigns for the Paralympics and for the Olympics. Two movements with distinct histories who've overlapped in recent years and ended up in the same place at the same time, basically, mm-hmm. for games like London. How do you think that affects people's perception of the Paralympics?
I think Oscar is an interesting case. I mean, I'm in the privileged position where I know Oscar reasonably well, and we've had a few chats about what he does. I mean, obviously the point you're talking about is Oscar's quite close to qualifying for the Olympics. He's got the B standard in the 400 metres, and there's a good chance he could get the A standard competed at the Olympics. I mean, I guess it is interesting because there's an argument, you know, if Oscar compete at the Olympics, why can't all Paralympians go and compete at the Olympics? But I think the key point really is not every Paralympian has the ability of Oscar, really. And Oscar himself, if you ask him, his key point is really, you know, the Paralympics comes first. The Olympics will be a bonus, where I think a lot of people from the outside perceive it as that the Olympics is actually his end goal. No, it's not. The Paralympics isn't. And the Paralympic competition is what he says he prefers competing in.
That's really interesting, because he is also somebody with an acquired disability. And so, I mean, I always find it fascinating. I was born disabled. I find it fascinating that the difference in attitude between people who acquire disabilities to those who are born with them. And so it's interesting for somebody who could have dreamed of Olympic competition as a child to actually have reached the point where he's comfortable with aiming to attain Paralympic superiority and not to reclaim that lost dream of Olympic victory.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. I mean, with Oscar, it was quite obviously young when he had this amputation and had these legs that have now become famous as these Blade Runners and as the Blade Runner. But yeah, I mean, I think the key point really is he is probably one of the Paralympic movement's greatest ambassadors, in that he is so strongly supportive of Paralympic sport, and that's always been number one to him.
There is also there is a question of integration within the Paralympic movement as well. Those of you who followed this show since before it started will be aware that I covered the exclusion of intellectually disabled athletes from the Paralympic movement prior to Technical Difficulties getting on air. They thankfully have now got back into the movement. I don't know to what I haven't unfortunately had a chance to speak to people from within that sector of the Paralympic family since they got back in. So is it smooth sailing towards London 2012 then, one happy family?
I don't know if smooth sailing's the word. I mean, obviously the key issue you're talking about here is it was this big scandal in 2000, obviously, with the ID basketball team, and it saw the whole of the intellectual disability movement banned. I mean, they've come back in. It's sport by sport at this case, really, and they obviously do have to be careful. I mean, obviously, intellectual disability is you know, it's a tricky subject, really. But the IPC have changed a lot in these 10 years since the ban, and since ID athletes have come back into the Paralympics in 2009. And it is a sort of an ongoing process, really. But I think it has to be, because it's very key that we don't have a repeat of what happened in 2000. And what they do need to do does need to be done carefully. They do need to be the proper structures in place to make sure we don't have a repeat, because there'll be nothing worse for intellectual disability athletes for a scandal to reoccur in 2012, and I think it has to be a slow process to make sure that doesn't happen.
And also, I guess it would be pretty horrendous for the Paralympic movement in general, and for those of us that want the Paralympic movement to progress, if there was as public a disintegration in good practice as there was in 2000, just at the point when maybe things are getting more airtime, positive press and awareness. I was discussing with you that with just to get back to the idea of integrating the Olympics and the Paralympics, it is, I find, a fascinating subject, because you get competing views within the movement, but also competing attitudes from outside as well, and from non-disabled people towards the Paralympics. And I just wonder where you think we are in terms of people's perceptions, and whether or not it would work. Well, let's just hypothesize for a moment. Would it work if you flicked a switch today and there was one event with the Paralympics and Olympic athletes in the same event rather than back to back?
I think that's definitely quite an interesting question. Before we came on air, obviously we talked about the Commonwealth Games, where it is sort of one fully integrated event, and the current Commonwealth Games president, Mike Fennell, when I asked him, actually seems to think that the best way to handle disability sport is fully integrated, just one fully integrated event. I don't know whether that is really the case, because it could become a case of the Paralympics really just gets submerged, and when it's sort of combined with the Olympics, really, it sort of would disappear into the background. The Paralympics on its own has got a particular brand, you know, it's quite unique. It doesn't take place at the same time, and you know, it's just one whole event celebrating disability sport as such. I mean, IPC president Philip Craven hasn't completely ruled out a move. I mean, there's a possibility down the line it could happen, and who knows whether that could happen. I mean, right now I think that switch that you mentioned probably shouldn't be flicked, and right now I think it's probably better to have the Paralympics as a separate event, and what that offers really is something special. It's different from the Olympics, but it's certainly got, in my opinion, better stories, and it's got its you know, it's definitely got its own merit and its own right.
At the risk of asking a rude question, I didn't get a chance to ask you on air. Do you have personal experience of disability yourself?
No, I don't. I'm just an observer in that respect.
So how do you find the social side of it then? How do you approach covering a sports movement that is so socially grounded, as everything relates to people's ability to do things that are pretty fundamental, as it does, it relates to the, otherwise they would be competing in non-disabled sport if there wasn't some impairment that stopped them from doing it. So how has that been? It's just I'm just curious as to how it appears from the as an impartial observer, I guess.
I'll be honest. I mean, sort of coming into working in Paralympic sport, I didn't have a huge amount of knowledge of it, really. I didn't really understand sort of what went on in it. And it was, you know, just within a matter of months of taking up, you meet these incredible people with such incredible stories. I'm fortunate enough to work sort of both across Olympic sport and Paralympic sport. And you meet these great Olympians, really. And they are, you know, they're very driven people, but their story is almost they grow up, they're great sports person, and they succeed at top level. It's quite limited. You speak to these Paralympians and they've got such fascinating stories, you know. I mean, I'm no film director, but 10 times out of 10 I'll take a Paralympian as a life story to turn into a Hollywood film over an Olympian, because they just have got these amazing sort of life stories, and it's just about overcoming adversity, which I think is amazing.
Well, I think it's interesting that you did. I mean, you volunteered that before. You said that you thought that it was, fascinating to follow it. I find it fascinating myself. It's doubly interesting to hear people who don't have that. It occurred to me when I was talking to you before, I said it to you, that there is a danger if you mix the two together, that people lose the aspirational element. That people like me, who grew up and saw Tanny Gray Thompson racing as a kid. I'm not in a wheelchair, but it was enough to make me think, oh, that's doable then. I've got no chance. I'm a rubbish athlete, but I'm also at the kind of flat end of the CP classification, and I would just about get in probably if I was remotely good at any sport, and I'm not. But it allowed me to dream a bit. And I think it's the same with Olympic sport. Interestingly, last time I said this to someone, and it was someone in my family, and I said, don't you think that people aspire to these? And they basically pulled a face at me. So maybe that's just me. But I think if you mix the two together, it's almost impossible to keep the Paralympic sport in the public eye if you bring it into the Olympic fold, because the Olympics is, the second biggest sports event in the world and the biggest multi-sport event in the world, and the Paralympics isn't. I mean, there are a lot of athletes and a lot of classifications, and I've been there and done that, and that's kind of not helping. The classification system doesn't help in itself. But I think it's... I wonder. I mean, the Commonwealth Games has done that, and as you said, the chairman of the Commonwealth Games is he said that he told you that was his idea of the best case scenario, was that the entire disability sports movement eventually ended up competing in the same events as non-disabled athletes. I think I agree with you. I think that this would lose momentum. I think I said this to you before. I think it's proven by the fact that I don't think you'd get many people talking about the disabled events in the Commonwealth Games. They kind of disappear off the radar, and then every 4 years people pop up. I mean, actually, it's another thing that has changed recently. The Paralympic World Cup, which is about to kick off, has kind of brought people in, I think, because it's every year, isn't it? And so you don't get this 4 year. And I, again, as a kid, I watched this thing happen. You watch the Paralympics, it's all very interesting, and then they disappear into a black hole of media coverage for 3.5 years. How does the Paralympic World how does the Paralympic World Cup appear to you? Does it work in keeping people's attention?
In my opinion, I think it definitely works. I mean, the Paralympic World Cup itself, it's actually more of an exhibition event as opposed to a World Championships, really. It's more about sort of showcasing the events, and there's a lot of sort of mixed classifications as well. So you'd get things that you wouldn't probably see at a major World Championships. But I think it definitely does work, because it's out there to sort of promote Paralympic sport. Obviously, it's gone onto Channel 4 now, which will mean even more parallel or sort of coverage, television coverage ahead of head of the channel covering the Paralympic Games as well. And having been up there last year, really, I just thought it was really good. I mean, on the first day, it was athletics. You had that man Pistorius again in action. And there was 5,500 people turned out for that, which was a record attendance for a Paralympic event in the UK. So it's definitely growing. I think ahead of 2012 and with it being in Manchester, that's really going to just help bring the focus onto the Paralympic Games and onto Paralympic sport. And it's definitely an appetite for it as well.
I think, I think exhibition events have always, this is my personal view and not necessarily that of anyone else, but I fear that exhibition events give people the wrong impression when they're disability sports exhibition. It's not necessarily the PWC, but exhibition events of disability sport within a non-disabled event. And I think the Commonwealth Games did this in Manchester. They had when they first introduced disability sport, it wasn't competitive, gave people completely the wrong impression. And I'm from that neck of the woods. And you just kind of thought, well, hang on a minute, either take it seriously or don't do it at all. Because otherwise people turned up for the non-disabled sport and they saw people playing around in disability sport and thought, oh, everyone must be doing this for a laugh then. When actually there's lots of, it actually is something I've never quite got my head around, but how you process the psychology of being an elite athlete, but an elite athlete at a different, within a different elite, at a different level than other elite athletes, and that the two don't compete as a general rule. I mean, Oscar must constantly be weighing that up in his head, because it's just no one else tries it, because almost the definition of Paralympic sport is that it's the people that couldn't compete in the Olympics.
No, I think you raise an interesting point there. I mean, Xavi Gonzalez, who's the IPC chief executive, is someone who's talked about it. And regarding exhibition events, he says in the past, with the best will in the world, they've just gone wrong, because, you know, if they're not set up in the right way, if it's not done sort of properly, then it can look like, you say, you know, it doesn't seem right and it doesn't really work. But I think with Paralympic sport, you do have to be quite clear. I mean, to say it is at the level of Olympic sport and at the level of able-bodied sport, I think is unrealistic. It does still have to advertise itself in certain ways, and I think these exhibition events are important, really, and I think they work if the athletes go there and they try and they are serious about it. But I'd agree with Javin. I think they have to be done in the right way. You can't be half-hearted about the organisation if you're going to do something like the BT Paralympic World Cup. Do it with the best possible structure and make sure that it means something to the athletes, so they'll go there and give it their best, and the spectators can see the best of Paralympic sport.
I think you've also just reminded me of something. I think half-hearted infrastructure actually affects Paralympic sport more than disabled sport, more than any other sphere of sport I can think of, because most of the people competing are dealing with an underlying health condition. My experience of it is that the more stressed they get, the more it hurts, or that the less well they're able to compete, even more so than that's true of every athlete. And so when you get a half-hearted job, you may as well not bother at all. And I kind of touched on it when I was talking to Tracy McKillen during the ban for intellectually disabled athletes. President of the UK Sports Association for People with Learning Disabilities, which is a mighty old mouthful. She said that it was that was the problem, that you just ended up with, she used Barcelona as an example, that actually the Paralympics were in Madrid, and so everything ended up being completely disconnected and strained, and everyone had not an unpleasant time, but they had less of a pleasant time than they would be surrounded by the other Paralympians. By the other athletes, not by the other Paralympians. And that's a siren call for integration in a sense, that actually the social impact of bringing elite non-disabled athletes into a place where they are going to meet elite disabled athletes might encourage people to be a bit more open-minded about their perceptions of elite sport.
Yeah, no, I think that's there's definitely a point in that. I think it's again just takes me back to the point I made of just if you're doing these exhibitions and they just have to be structured. With regard to integration, there's always going to be an argument on each side of the fence, and they're both probably going to be valid arguments in that some people argue integration is a good thing, mixing it up, and some people say it's a bad thing. You need to keep it separate. Really, I don't really think there's anything fundamentally wrong with the Paralympics as they are. And I think if you and I sat down in 2013 after the London 2012 Paralympics, people's perceptions are going to be a lot different after they've seen the 2012 Paralympic Games than they are now. I think when you actually see them, when they actually are in London, we can talk about them all they want, but when you actually see that and it covers our TV screen, it takes over sort of Channel 4, the media are covering, I think really perceptions will change a lot, really. And I think then people's view on the Paralympics and on just disability in general will definitely change, because they would have been exposed to that when they haven't been so much in the past.
I think that's an invitation. I will considering we are both doing our same roles in 2013, I will invite you back on and we will discuss that. But I suspect you're right, actually, that the exposure to lots of strong and successful disabled people is a different experience completely to actually most people's awareness, perception, experience of disabled people. I think we have to touch a bit on the dynamics of sporting success in the last few minutes. This is Technical Difficulties on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Tim Abbott, and my guest is Tom Dagan from Inside World Parasport. Who are the rising stars, and who should we be looking out for? Who's going to disappear off in the next year and not be seen again, I guess?
With Paralympic sport, and it is the beauty of Paralympic sport, people can turn up literally of nowhere. I mean, it is a case where someone can have an accident maybe January 2012 would be too late, but they could, still turn up. The beauty of Paralympic sport is you can emerge. I mean, I think looking at my predictions for the major stars, I mean, you can't really venture too far away from Oscar, because I think he'll turn up and he'll do well. Ellie Simmons, our young swimmer as well, is obviously a strong tip for gold, as is sort of Dave Weir, our best wheelchair racers. Some of the ones that people might not know too well sort of in the mainstream is Esther Verger, who's a Dutch wheelchair tennis player, but she's won I think it's over about 500 games in a row, which is the longest winning streak sort of in Paralympic sports. I think she's definitely one to look out for, and there's other guys with Ireland's Jason Smith, who's a visually impaired athlete but competes in able-bodied. There's definitely a few out there, but I mean, I think it will really be a case of turning up, and someone who I haven't even has even hit my radar right now might just turn up and dominate. That's the beauty of Paralympic sport.
I mean, it's an interesting, you're right about the nature of disability, and that people just they're not just disabled. People are disabled through the course of life. There was a Spanish athlete who was, how do I put this in broadcastable terms? He was injured in the commission of a crime and became a Paralympic athlete. I know there was lots of negative press about him being a former, used to explosives expert in criminal elements, but he I think because of the nature of people just actually it kind of popped up, and then people just went, well, so there are people from all sorts of fields of human endeavor in the Olympics as well, I think was the counter argument. And people do the stuff, do their time, come out the other end, and it just kind of occurred to me as an interesting example. And unfortunately, the reason it doesn't get that much press coverage is this particular person's case is probably a good thing for the Paralympics movement, because unfortunately it would just make people wonder if everyone had a unfortunately negative backstory like that, when of course it isn't true. But I've spent far too many minutes of this series discussing people's negative perceptions of disabled people to not fear that if you give them a negative story, they won't presume that that's the general reason. I have to say, I mean, I'll repeat what I said before. I think it is fundamental to the point of Paralympic sport integrating with society, not necessarily with the Olympics, that actually it just illustrates successful disabled people into the public domain and people's perceptions. And you're right about Channel 4. It's interesting that they have the distinct contract. BBC Radio, interestingly, still has both. And I think I might do a bit of comparatives there and see whether the BBC Radio people cope with having to try and balance both, or as opposed to Channel 4 concentrating wholeheartedly on the one group of people. And I mean, wow, we're 460 something days, according to the Paralympic International Paralympic Committee website I checked before, until London 2012. So, I mean, that's a reasonably long chunk of time in terms of how quickly health changes and people's perceptions of things change and how quickly people get bored with things. So, so where do you think we'll be in, you know, in those 460 days' time? Do you think that the majority of people sitting in Stratford in 460 days' time are going to be people like me and you, but actually just say people like me who are disabled and people like you who are reporting on it? Or there will be overlap from the Olympics, or just generally curious non-disabled people who haven't watched disabled sport before?
Short answer, I think probably a combination of all of those groups you've just mentioned. I mean, one thing that did come up was with these Paralympic tickets, they're you know, sort of 50% of them will be around £10. They are quite cheap compared to the probably, you know, the very highly priced Olympic tickets. And I think people will just want to go down to the venues, be where the Olympics starts, well, and suddenly stumble across this thing called Paralympic sport and realise sort of, you know, how fast-paced it is, how skillful it is, and maybe just, you know, from actually just not knowing much about it, become quite addicted, because, you know, I think Britain is a sports-loving nation, and, you know, Paralympic sport, when you're actually there in the thick of the action, it's hard not to really like it and appreciate what they do.
I would never be accused of jingoism, I don't think, but as a matter of fact, the Paralympics are ours. We created the Paralympic movement. Actually, someone just pulled a face at me last time I told them this. There still appears to be ignorance to the fact that the Paralympics were created in Buckinghamshire. They just presume that because they've been tacked on to the IOC's circus, that they actually have the same roots. I will repeat this for anyone who isn't aware of it. The Paralympics were created in Stoke Mandeville Hospital in Buckinghamshire by a German emigre doctor looking after injured troops, but it spread out into this whole joyous thing that is now the Paralympic movement. And thankfully we now have a complete group of most groups of disabled people are represented within that same umbrella. I wonder, I mean, we were reflecting on those ticket prices. It's good that they're low. Are they too low?
I don't think so. And I say that purely because I think making tickets for the Paralympic prohibitively expensive wouldn't help anyone. To make them sort of over, I mean, it's a case of supply and demand, really. You know, if you're going to fill them, you know, with high prices and people still pay them, then fair enough. But I don't think it really helps, you know, having them ridiculously priced and people don't buy them. Having them low priced invites people along. It will get people interested in Paralympic sport. And I think we're naive if we think that, you know, Paralympic sport is, you know, as popular as the Olympics at this stage, because it's not. You know, it's getting there, and it may well get there one day in the future, but right now it's not on the same level. So I think really they probably are fairly priced, and if that does make more people go and does make more people get into Paralympic sport, then that's a good thing.
Well, stay tuned to this show, and if I'm still around, I'll let you know when it's happening. I'm planning to be there in some way or shape or form. This is Technical Difficulties. I am Tim Abbott, and that brings us to the end of today's show. My guest was Tom Dagan from Inside World Parasport. How can people find you, Tom?
It's quite easy. Just log on to the internet, and it's www.insideworldpowersport.biz for all the leading Paralympic news.
This show will be up on lightchronicles.info/crip as soon as I can get it up there. And my Twitter, as ever, is at lightchronic. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. Up next, Enemies of Good Art. Wear your scars with pride, and remember, we all have technical difficulties. Goodbye.